The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Donal O'Donoghue is on his way to us for the week trending. He's been stuck in heavy traffic. I'm told he'll be here in a few moments. But Brianna Parkins, the Virgin Media broadcaster, is with us, just back safely from Australia. That was some trip. I know you were on the programme with us as well when you were in Australia. Must be distressing, was it, to be at home to see your country burning like that?
You know what? We've had worse fires in terms of people dying, but never in terms of the size and the scale. So my parents, their house is in the city of Sydney. It's in suburbia, and you just couldn't breathe. You couldn't hang washing out. You couldn't go down to the park. So it definitely affected more people I knew. We nearly lost family houses. The day I landed, we had to go and help my uncle evacuate his house. So I was jet lagged moving animals, dogs, cows, sheep off the property. So, but look, we're lucky we've made it through the other side. No one I knew lost a house personally, but the horrific stories you're seeing coming out of it now in the cleanup, it's heartbreaking.
Okay. Well, you're back in Ireland. You're back doing general election coverage as one of your duties with Virgin Media. And of course, the debate this week between Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar was one of the central elements. We're not going to go into all the politics of it, but we are interested in whether it was fair or not to bring up the issue as to whether politicians have ever used drugs in the past. Let's hear a little bit of that moment when Leo Varadkar paused.
Final question to both. An honest answer. Have you ever taken illegal drugs in
Absolutely.
Any shape or form?
No, I never have.
Leo Varadkar?
I answered that question in a hot press interview about 12 or 13 years ago, and I answered it truthfully.
Which is? The answer that you did?
Yes, but it was obviously a long time ago.
And then he had to clarify a little bit more about it yesterday.
I answered that question in the past, and I answered it truthfully. I'm not going to go into any more detail. You know, I'm conscious that I'm the Taoiseach of the country to a certain extent. I'm a little bit of a role model, and you know, I don't want to be doing anything or saying anything that in any way promotes drug use or suggests to young people or the students in here that it's in any way okay. So I won't be saying any more.
Okay, Brianna, would a politician in Australia get asked a question like that?
Completely. And I've had knockdown, drag out fights with people about in the newsroom about whether it's appropriate to ask for journalists to ask politicians these questions. And two things. I think it's only appropriate if the politician has taken a really hardline anti-drug stance and you've got like this brilliant story, you know, them doing a line in a bathroom somewhere.
So you're exposing hypocrisy.
Yeah, only if it's exposing hypocrisy. And I remember there was a massive fight in the newsroom and my old cantankerous kind of like shoe leather, semi-alcoholic boss turned around to us and said, I've been to the Christmas parties and I've all seen what you've been up to.
Exactly, because, and I'm not accusing Pat Kenny, who asked the question, of the way of doing anything illegal or wrong. No. However, perhaps there are many of the journalists who've been following up on this who might have their own pasts in relation to the consumption of cannabis, cocaine, whatever other type, ecstasy, what other type of illegal drugs?
I mean, we've all been to university, and if you're a journalist like me, you went to art school. And I think we would hate that question to be turned around and asked of us. And again, I think it's only appropriate if you're exposing hypocrisy in that politician. Otherwise, it's just sort of sideline debates. And he was honest about it. He came out about it years ago. And if I'm being frankly honest, I would rather a policymaker who's making policy on drugs and drug reform to have kind of background and experience in it. You don't want someone who's never even had a drag of a cigarette forming public policy on drugs.
Okay, and of course, we also have an issue. I mean, the amount of Irish politicians who've had a liking for alcohol and has impaired their decision making, because we have had very prominent politicians, some of whom I've known, some of whom from before the time when I was covering journalism, who were alcoholics, functioning alcoholics in their jobs. And yet nothing was ever made of that.
I mean, hats off to them for being functioning alcoholics. I think I drink a bottle of wine and I'm on the couch till 12 the next day. But you're right, alcohol is definitely a bigger problem, I know, in Australia and here in terms of cost to the public to treat. I mean, the HSC in recent times has taken a really progressive stance. You look at the injection clinic legislation, I think Ireland is definitely getting more progressive and more harm preventative in drug use.
Donal O'Donoghue has joined us. He's after running, I think, from a bag of street to get here, and he's slightly out of breath. So
I'm okay. I think when I looked at that the other night, though, Matt, what struck me was, so from Leo's perspective, he'd gone with the finding his humility, and he'd gone with the, you know, I mightn't be as good as you, Micheál, for how I approach things. And I think that started to resonate quite well. The uncomfortable bit was when Pat Kenny asked him the direct question, was that pause? You know, where he, you know, he said, I've answered this question 10 years ago in the hot press. And, you know, that's all I want to say about it. And Micheál and Pat kind of went, and what is it? It was that pause that I think is going to be a big challenge for him.
Why is it a challenge? I mean, is it okay? There's a significant reason why people are saying to him, look, don't do cocaine or other drugs like that, because one, they are not good for you. And secondly, you're also effectively giving money to criminal gangs who get involved in very violent activities. And understanding all of that, but perhaps think people have done things in the past without fully understanding the consequences of the actions of their drug taking. So do they deserve to be hauled up for what may be what called youthful indiscretions?
Exactly. So something, a decision that you make as a 20-something-year-old student, you know, should have precluded you from holding the highest office in the state. I think, to be fair to Leo, I think he answered the question. I think he was honest, which is more than you can say for some politicians globally. The pause, I think, was the bit, because no matter how much preparation their advisors can help them with, when you're asked a direct question, sometimes the direct answer is the way to go. And that was my view. Maybe at that moment he should have just said yes. But it was years ago, it was in the early 2000s. He's clearly come out and said that he doesn't advocate, and he sees himself in his role as Taoiseach as a role model. So he doesn't want to create the wrong impression for people. But for me, it was just that pause that made it difficult for him.
OK, let's move on to other issues. How worried should people be, do you think, Brianna, about the spread of the coronavirus? Or is this just like SARS previously and other things, a sort of a big media hoo-ha and exaggeration?
Well, we do have one suspected case in Belfast. And I do remember as a young teenager, SARS might have been outbreaking in Australia. We all got very excited. We got to wear masks to school. It was an exciting time. We thought the world was ending, and then it didn't. So far, there's been no active cases reported in Ireland. In fact, there's no active screening going on at the airports. There's no passengers being pulled off in question. They are monitoring for symptoms, but it seems like no one's on high alert just yet.
Of course, we do have ordinary, straightforward influenza, which has killed dozens of people in this country. It's amazing how we all get so worried about a new virus, which may or may not become a major killer, when we actually do have a killing infection and people refuse to get flu jabs to protect themselves against
it. That's not as sexy, though. I mean, the things I'm being reported in the Red Tops are like, you know, it's even koala meat. You could have gotten it from koala meat and snake meat. And it's a bit more sexy than just saying the plain old flu will get you in the end.
Exactly. I mean, we're looking at, there's been 26 deaths. But when you look at that against the population of China, you wonder. I know 4 people in Scotland are being tested for the potential virus. And that one case. So I think they're looking at 2 different things. They're looking, have you travelled back from Wuhan in China? Are you, you know, have you got a temperature, etc., and trying to screen people out on that basis? And I think the one in Belfast has been isolated, you know, as a precautionary measure and seems to be responding well to treatment. So let's hope that it's...
I see the way they build things in China. There was a report this afternoon that in Wuhan they've decided to build a 1,000-bed hospital to treat people. The hospital will be ready on the 3rd of February. Could these people be put in charge of our National Children's Hospital, perhaps, to get the building ready? Just been brought to my attention that Pat Kenny, who, of course, asked that question of Leo Varadkar about the use of illegal drugs, has been asked about his own possible use of same. And the quote from Pat Kenny is, I lived in the United States during the 60s and 70s at the time of Woodstock, so make up your own mind from that. OK, let's move on. And there's a Wetherspoons bar in England in a place called Gravesend, which has decided to bring in a new 2-drink limit for parents accompanied by children. What do you make of this, Donald O'Donoghue?
Yeah, so the manager of this particular place is a guy called Robert Pocock, and he put up a sign that basically said, you've got a 2-drink limit. So if you bring kids with you, you can have one drink, one alcoholic drink, followed by another alcoholic drink with a sit-down meal. And he brought this rule in to say that he was protecting children from harm. I think reading between the lines, his upset was the fact that people were going in having a few drinks and the kids were running wild. So essentially he was calling on a piece of legislation, the 1902 Licensing Act from the UK, where it says it's illegal to be drunk while in charge of a child under the age of 7.
OK, are pubs a proper place, Brianna, do you think, for children to be? Or has it all changed because pubs now are quasi-restaurants where families go to eat, that you're just going to simply have to accept that if that's it, children are going to see adults drinking alcohol?
Well, it depends where you are. I've noticed in Ireland people don't bring their kids as much to pubs, where in Australia they're big open spaces, there's beer gardens, there's often, this sounds really bad, we're a nation of bowsies, there's often children's playgrounds in the pubs. And it is because they're kind of these big mega structures with restaurants and all this stuff attached to it.
Yeah, I think the other thing with this is that Wetherspoons quickly had him take the poster down to say it wasn't a group-wide or a chain-wide thing, this was a decision that he had made. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's a huge difference between going into a pub, having a family meal with a drink or two. If, for example, if the partner is driving, shouldn't you be able to have two or three drinks on a Sunday afternoon? But it's a very different thing to the people that go in.
Is it a good example to be showing children to be drinking multiple pints on a Sunday afternoon?
I mean, that's how I grew up.
I don't know.
There would be like, you know, sort of booths, and there'd be like lots of kids like me, the coats thrown over us, having a little sleep at 6 p.m. with our parents would still be out. Not that my parents were never, I can't remember ever seeing them drunk, but there definitely was, you know, you got a packet of chips and you went out and played in the playground.
Yeah, if it was in Ireland, you could maybe get a bottle of fizzy orange and a packet
great.
Of potato.
Yeah. Child abuse, I loved it.
In those playgrounds that you have in the pubs, bouncy castles and things like that.
They're like full-blown three-story
but then
things.
What happens when the adults have a few jars? Did you find yourself that you're pushing the children out of the way in the bouncy castle to have a go at it?
It definitely has gotten worse in recent years. There's kind of this sort of entire that kids belong in pubs and public spaces in Australia. And there's been this debate over whether pubs are for adults or pubs are for children. And there is sort of this sense of it is a bit weird. I think they have to leave by about 6 or 7. They can't stay there all night. But it is a bit weird when you're on the lash and then a small child runs past you.
I just remember a Celtic Tiger argument that there used to be. And there was a restriction brought in about the time that children could be in pubs at 9 o'clock in the evening. Because particularly in Ireland, when people were going on holidays, they'd bring their kids to the pub until 11 or 12 o'clock at night. And the adults who didn't have children, quite rightly, were fairly fed up to see all these kids running around the place, making a racket.
Adults who have children and then got a babysitter and spent the money and they're trying to have a night out and then now have to put up with someone else's kids.
Yeah, I think it's up to individual judgment. I mean, I think it's terrible to see where people...
How can you trust individual judgment when there's drink involved?
Well, yeah, but you see people going having a load of drinks and leaving their kids unattended for a long period of time, and then you have to balance that with, you know, on a family occasion, maybe there's a communion or something like that and people want to be able to have a couple, so... I think it's down to the individual, isn't it?
Okay, Brianna, is the Church of England maybe the Roman Catholic Church in disguise? Because bishops of the Church of England have issued pastoral guidance to members of the congregation saying that sex belongs only within heterosexual marriage and that sex in gay or straight civil partnerships falls short of God's purpose for human beings. That sounds like old-fashioned traditional Irish Catholic teaching.
I don't know why we're surprised. Churches hate riding. We know this. It's their policy. It's been their policy for years.
There's been some churches that have advocated it, but that's a different story.
But generally, traditional major players don't like riding. I'd say they're a bit more slightly.
Is that a word you use in Australia, or have you picked that up since you came to
Ireland?
No,
we would say rooting.
Okay.
Instead of writing. So I've changed my vernacular. I'm learning. I'm culturally adapting.
Okay.
It's culture. So I'm unsurprised, but I think they take a slightly more tolerant view in that the members of their clergy are able to be in same-sex relationships as long as they're not actually physically having sex. It's slightly more tolerant than the Catholic Church.
They had a lovely term for it where it understood that people in civil partnerships could have sexually abstinent friendships, and that was okay. Like, no wonder they're having difficulty with the recruitment of new members.
Okay, let's move on. Donald Trump, apparently, Donald, has set a record for the most tweets he's managed in a day.
He's beaten his own record. I know before he was in office, he set a record where he had done 161 tweets in a day. And then he in office, he was up in the 120s. But there was a headline that said that Trump has surpassed his previous record of 123 Twitter postings in a day. And this is there's a company called Factbase that basically does the data analytics and you know, watches Trump's presidency from a data perspective. But this all came down to, I think it was in December when there was the articles of impeachment, and he basically went on a rampage, and he was tweeting, you know, having a go at Adam Schiff. He was tweeting, doing lots of retweeting. So he's got 71 million followers. And even last week when he was in Davos, he managed to tweet 41 times between 6 a.m. and 7 a.m. local time. So the man is he's like a Twitter.
I wonder, is he doing them himself, Brianna? Maybe has he got staff who are putting out? Because sometimes you see some which are more articulate and less nonsensical than the ones you know are coming from him.
The ones that are in all capitals and use the word tremendous, generally, he's, I think. I also wonder if he's using TweetDeck to schedule tweets ahead of time.
Do you think he's that sophisticated technically?
I'd say he has someone who does it for him.
I doubt he's that savvy, but you're right. You can definitely see the difference between the homegrown ones and the ones that he's had help with.
Organic tweets.
But Brianna, do you think, are his tweets setting the news agenda in the way they used to, or have they become so prolific that now actually a lot of people are just simply ignoring them?
I think he has done himself a disservice by tweeting so much. I mean, it depends what network you're on. Fox tends to kind of set the agenda by his tweets. And he tweets into shows knowing this. Like, he tweets, his tweet schedule in America lines up with certain shows on Fox, and they're tweeting back live. It's this weird symbiotic relationship. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if the next president will rule by Twitter the same way he has.
Okay, of course, he was in Davos. Greta Thunberg was in Davos, which of course then got lots of people worked up again, didn't it, Brianna? Although it was interesting to see that when Prince Charles from Britain went to meet her and to deliver a climate change speech, how did he get to Davos?
He took an electric car, but before that took a private jet, which released, I think, 16,000 tonnes, so people estimated.
Six tonnes of carbon. Yeah. And I think it had a cost of about 15 grand.
Yeah, 50,000 pounds, yeah.
But then he also snubbed the American Vice President Mike Pence in a greeting line. He just simply walked past him, looked away from him and did not shake hands with him, which is not the type of thing that's going to do British-American relations an awful lot of good. Ivanka Trump, meanwhile, said that climate change activists won't solve anything by having a purely pessimistic outlook, which presumably is a go at young Greta as well, Donald.
Yeah, so I think when Ivanka first came on the scene, she looked as though she was going to be a bit of an advocate for climate change in some respects. But she was quoted in the New York Times as saying that a purely pessimistic outlook isn't going to solve the problem. So she's certainly been less vocal than her dad, who called Greta a prophet of doom, and is, you know, he made some remark about how she had kind of trumped him, sorry for the pun, trumped him for the Time Person of the Year award. So I don't know, Ivanka seems to be like Trump light at this stage.
And when we're talking climate change, Brianna, and public transport, there's been a map gone viral this week showing the comparison between Ireland's train network now and 100 years ago.
Well, they've updated the map. There's a bit of an old map and some lines weren't shown, but some were on there. But there's a lot less. And as someone cruelly pointed out, the North is, Ulster's really lost out. And there's actually a train museum in Donegal where there is no train anymore.
Because there actually were quite a lot of train lines into Donegal. If you look 100 years ago, the country was covered in train lines. It looks like about three times as many as we actually have now.
They've got a rail museum, though, which is handy.
Yeah, and I think this was a piece of work that I think IBEC had put out to, you know, obviously with the green agenda, trying to encourage a bit more use of public transport and calling out how important trade between and connectivity between Northern Ireland and Ireland is. But, you know, I think in the 90s particularly, there was a lot of stations that were decommissioned. So they were advocating for things like an hourly rapid service between Dublin and Belfast and getting a Dublin Belfast Cork line back up and running, but it's in 100 years we've had a real deterioration of the rail network, and it's striking to see the two maps side by side.
And how expensive it would be to actually to restore any or all of those lines.
Heavy infrastructure. It makes no sense that in times of boom, heavy infrastructure isn't the first investment.
Wouldn't that be a great topic for the incoming government or the whole campaign to look at, rather than whether Leo smoked a bit of weed when he was was in college.
Good marijuana. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Donal O'Donoghue, Managing Director of Sanderson Recruitment, and Virgin Media broadcaster Brianna Parkins, for being with us here on The Last Word at Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.